accession number 20300, reel 3.
Mr. Coover, reel 3.
I felt strongly that any trace of fear would be despised, and that my best chance of success, my best chance of survival, would be to make them appreciate my behavior. Anyway, he shouted, "Japan." I shouted a lot of Japanese at me, but the only word I could understand was Japan. And I was slightly defiant, nearly shouted back "England," but I didn't. I had sense not to. And I stood there like that. But he had ordered them to apply a bit of pressure, but they didn't actually draw blood. After this little show went on for several minutes, he suddenly ordered them to leave me. And then there's a bullock cart there, and they tied my hands. It would have been, can't remember, front or behind me, how they tied my hands together. And I was put in the bullock cart and started to move away. Then a Japanese journalist appeared, actually, after a bit. Rushed up on, climbed up onto the bullock cart and started to slap my face, a sort of harbinger of things to come, as I wrote. But after a bit, he got quite friendly. He could speak English well. He regaled me with the fact that Japan was winning everywhere. Singapore fell the next day, as it happened, you see, it was this February the 14th, and it fell on February the 15th. And he in the end, he got rather more friendly, and he left me half a dozen raw eggs, which he had with him. But I tried eating one, because I hadn't had anything to eat for 72 hours, and but it didn't work, it was horrible, and eventually I was taken to him. We stopped for the night somewhere in one of these villages, and I were going to be cooked a meal. And I asked the Burman to cook my eggs for me, but he spat on me, but he refused utterly to do anything about it. And so I ate the raw eggs with my rice, and it was jolly good. We'd been quite a long before we stopped at that village, and then we resumed the journey again on bullock carts. We never went on to the road, so we couldn't have been near the road, I don't think. And we went again through these paths and got to the village of Kuzek. So I knew I must have got quite a long way. I know I didn't go north of the road, and I know I didn't go south of some lakes which I never saw, which appear on the map. So I would have said I probably was quite near the River Domtami. Anyhow, I spent the night at in the village of Kuzek. I remember waking up in the night. I still was bound with this thing. It was rather uncomfortable. I took my I undid it all, and the Japanese guard didn't worry. They were really weren't unfriendly, that lot. Apart from the tried to kill me, but they had no complaints over the way I was treated then by the private soldiers. Even the chap who'd taken me back in the bullock cart and who was looking after me in the village, because I was given food and everything, and certainly wasn't ill-treated. And the next day I was taken over the River Salween by that ferry to Pa'an. And there I was marched through the streets of Pa'an, and I came to the jail, and I heard a shout go up, "Kubra Saab is here." And that brought out onto the balcony of the house. Three smiling faces of other officers who have been taken after the Battle of Pahang. And that's how I became prisoner, really.
What happened to you as you were walking through this, being marched through the streets of Pahang?
Nothing, I just walked through the streets.
What were conditions like in the jail?
Well, we were, the officers were in a room of their own, one of which, I was only there for a couple of nights or so. I found, actually, that it was only that it was such a relief, having had those few days on my own, to be in the company of friends. And they gave us proper food. The only thing that did cause a problem, which is my fault, really, but one of the officers, Tootle, had been badly shot, and he was held elsewhere. I was allowed to go and see him, and I was very upset by his condition. Actually, he survived. It was remarkable, the war and everything. But I was upset and sort of walked through the guard room, ignoring all the Japanese. And there were shouts. But if that had done that later in Rangoon, I'd have been absolutely bashed around. But it didn't hit me. I think actually the adjutant had been taken prisoner, Hugh Mercer, and I think he did go and apologise or something to them and say that I hadn't realised I was upset or something, because it was, and I was told by my more senior officers that I was a prisoner now and should be sensible.
Were you kept for the rest of the war in Rangoon?
No, well, this was in Pahang. We then went down the next day, down the River Salween, and to Moulmein. We spent about 5 months there. Was it? Perhaps a bit less than that. And
in a jail?
In the jail again. And we weren't given enough food there. We weren't hit. But we were not given enough food. Just putting it mildly. And then we were shifted from there. I think it was in June. So it was about 3 months. Shifted in June in the hold of a ship, which was very unpleasant. We didn't know where we were going. We thought we were probably going to Singapore. And the sanitary arrangements were awful. We were then with the BORs, British other ranks. We were always segregated from our Indians. We never had to do with them. Japanese wouldn't allow us. And so then we then moved, we went by a ship. And, I remember they just had that can in the middle, was lured down, and anyone who wanted to spend a penny of any kind just had to sit on it, and I suppose pee into it or sit on it, and it was then lifted up. But some of the BORs had dysentery, and it was very, very unpleasant for them. And the whole of the hold of the ship was, there were sacks of jaggery, this unsweetened sugar, which when we started, we thought it was nice and anything sweet we'd eat it, but it pulled after a bit. We were locked in. I mean, if we'd been attacked, it would be, it's actually a death trap, it would have been, and we didn't know where we were going. But then when we did stop and we were called out onto deck, we saw the Sui De Gong Pagoda and knew we were in Rangoon, which was a relief. And so we then marched to Rangoon jail.
How long were you there for?
I was there from June till end of April 1945, from June 42.
What were conditions like in Rangoon jail?
They were bad to start with, a bit hairy. But
because of lack of food?
No, the food was much better. What actually happened was we were all lined up when we arrived there, and a commandant appeared Captain Kasima. As I write in my book, frankly, he was an unmitigated swine. And we were sort of told to bow to the Japanese, which is their form of saluting. And for the first time, officers were hit across the face. We were all taken off into solitary cells because the British made their prison. While we were in those cells, we were given food twice a day, which was compared with Moulmein, which was much better. But if you didn't salute the guard or anything like that, you got nastily beaten up. Or if he caught you when you weren't looking or caught talking, as I was, you were beaten up. And they made us answer questions, which actually I quite enjoyed doing. The papers would come, because solitary confinement, I like to exercise my brain as much as my body, and to answer the questions without giving any information, any use whatever. I found quite, but in such a way that they were not going to beat you up or anything, because it wasn't enough. Quite an interesting exercise, and I quite enjoyed that. But they also tried to make us broadcast, and those of us who said no were taken out, and they started, fortunately, with the senior officers. They were beaten up, knocked down by our own troop, by Indians or Burmese troops. The Indian troops were watching. They didn't do it. Just the Burmese troops, under the commandant, was standing there. And it was they knocked out Colonel Power, who'd been in the 5th, 17th Dogras. And then someone, a chap had come up from the ranks, an adjutant of the Inniskilling Fusiliers, called out, "Stop this nonsense." And the commandant did come forward and said, "Well, it gives all one more chance." He had intended to punish us all. Gives one more chance to say that we'd agree to broadcast. And the two who'd been beaten up, there's a Major Loring too. Colonel Power got up then, he'd been up pure senseless, and said, "Well, they're obviously going to go on with this little lark until we say yes." We don't have to broadcast. It's a long way away. Tokyo is what we're after, and if we ever get there, we can always refuse, and we should refuse. Something like that was the attitude. But there's no point in going on saying no, you see. So everyone said yes, and others had said no before, because they'd been horrible documents sent round about how shamelessly we'd been taken prisoner and all these sort of things, and some of us are not obedient to them in our minds. Some had said no, but had said yes. I was one of those who said no. And those who said no were still kept in solitary for 3 or 4 weeks longer. We were let out of solitary in September. The commandant went then, Kashima. None of the others were anything. We had two at least afterwards, but no one was like him. While we were always subject to military discipline, of course it was the food wasn't enough, but the diet didn't suit your appearance, and an awful lot of people died. From a treatment point of view, it was something we could all live with. It wasn't anything like those 3 months when we were in solitary, which was very unpleasant.
Was there any Allied bombing where you were?
Yes. Yes, there was. The jail was hit twice. First time I was playing bridge, I remember, and we decided to continue it and didn't go down into slip trenches. And someone said the 25 bombers coming towards us, but we knew the docks were the target. But what unfortunately happened was that a tail end Charlie didn't discharge his bombs over the docks. He discharged them over the jail. And one fell one side of the compound of the building and the other. And all our cards went everywhere. The next night, unbelievably, there was a night bombing raid. And again the jail was hit. Again our compound was hit. This time some of Americans and airmen. They'd always talked about they could drop a bomb in a bucket at 20,000 feet, but we noticed they were the first to go to slit trenches. Anyway, it was a terrible retribution because they dug their trenches too deep, and we were unable to get them out in time because they weren't direct hit, but all the earth came on top, and they were suffocated before they could be got out. There was 4 or 5 died there. The other things, the bombing is we were sent to work in target areas, like working the docks and the railway station. I never was a raid actually on the target while we were there. The next day we were clearing up and things like that. We were just lucky. I was one of the nearest because I was second in command of a work party. We were just leaving the docks when the sirens went and we saw our planes coming towards us. And it was a Captain Bunton of the Cameroonians I was with, and he said, "We'll show these buggers how British troops behave," he said. He asked me to carry on at the same rate. I said, "I'll go behind. I mean, we shouldn't run or just carry on walking up." And I remember seeing planes came higher and higher over us. I remember seeing the silver, you could see the silhouettes, and you could see the white bursts of anti-aircraft fire around them. Then the Japs ran for cover, two Japanese guards. We were approaching the jail then. One of the BORs shouted out at me, "Get a fucking move on." And then someone else said, "We're all right now. If they drop the bombs, they'll be in front of us." Well, the bombs then dropped and they were behind us on the docks, and we entered the jail. But that was the nearest I came to sort of being bombed outside the jail. But we did have that. Oh, not very early on, actually. There'd been one of the first raids. There was a lone plane had dropped a bomb outside the guardhouse when they didn't know we were there, and killed the whole of the guard. And it was on Christmas Eve, 1942.
Did you have any contact with civilians in Rangoon City?
No, we had civilians came from the Andaman Islands. Join us for a bit, a civilian internees, because the Andaman Islands were captured. About a skeleton lot, the governor and a skeleton staff came, and they were moved on after a bit. But we were not allowed any contact with anyone.
Did the Japanese say anything to you about how the war was going and your ultimate fate?
I would have said they were very, very cocky to start with, would prefer that they were quite happy for a 100-year war. Later they didn't say so much.
Did you think that you might not survive?
I didn't see any point in that. I thought that one tended to live from day to day. I mean, a good book to read and reasonable food, conversations and things like that. We did discuss occasionally. I think the general feeling was, someone, a friend of mine said, rather a waste of time if they do us in. But it was an uncertainty, and I think if Captain Kasim had still been in command, we wouldn't have had a hope in hell.
You said you were there till April 45.
That's right.
So where were you liberated from?
What happened in about 25th of April 1945, we were suddenly assembled, all the so-called fit prisoners, which I was one, were assembled, and we were told to march, carrying what we could. We left sick behind, and then we marched up north towards Pegu, the intention being to cross the bridge at Pegu, then go east-south-east down to Satang, and then down to Southern Burma. That was the object. What in fact happened was that our troops were breaking through up north at the same time, and there was so much air activity they couldn't march us in daytime. We had to march us at night, and we had 4 days of this march, which is very unpleasant. We got through Pegu, we moved to a place called Wo. We were on our way to the River Satang, and it was about the fourth morning in the towards morning, and the brigadier said, "I don't think the men can go on much longer." And to our surprise, Commandant agreed. We find somewhere to stop, and then when we stopped, he told the brigadier, "You're free," and shook his hands, gave us a piece of paper to give to any Japanese troops we might see. He said, "If you stay there, your troops will come through in a day or so." Well, we tried to make contact. We put out a lot of signals. So someone, an American officer, said, "Oh, I know how to signal to our aircraft." And he went out with a sort of piece of mirror. And we laid strips out saying, "White POWs here, ex-POWs here, drop food," or something like that, "food and ammunition, food and arms." And what actually happened was that planes did eventually come over, and they shot us up and killed the brigadier. But somehow they were fighter planes. They thought there was something odd about it, and they reported back, and that some bombers had been on their way, but they were turned back, fortunately, in mid-ocean, so to speak. And we then were left there, but an American actually had gone off to make contact, and he got through and made contact. We'd seen our troops. We could see a battle going on before the bombing, and he made contact with them, and they came along. It was the Indian Army. It's my own division, 17th Indian Division. My own battalion was not far away. It was still there 3 years later. And anyhow, they then relieved most of us. Others had disappeared after the bombing, were further away, and they got back the next day.
Which battalion was that liberated?
I was in the 710th Baluch Regiment.
No, which battalion liberated you?
West Yorkshire.
And what insignia did the fighters have that strapped you?
They're British.
What condition were you in when you were liberated?
I'd found the march exhausting. I'd suffered jaundice about 3 months before. I'd gone on a work party. I went and swam in the Rangoon River. I was given the opportunity by the Jap guard. And I've always put that down my jaundice there, and I had no treatment for it. And I'd found the march, although I was sort of so-called fit, I'd found the march quite a strain, actually. We did a lot of miles in a short time. And but apart from that, I was all right. I mean, I was, by Rangoon standards, I was reasonably fit.
Did your experiences leave you with any long-term effects?
Well, I realised in some ways that I needed to recharge my batteries then. And I suppose it obviously did affect me in some ways, but it didn't stop me from sort of carrying on normal life and putting it out of my mind and that sort of thing. I wouldn't thought it did me any good, but I wouldn't have thought it was anything really so. But there were some effects, obviously. There was sort of much more nervy than when I had no nerves at all to start with. One of the problems was not so much the Japanese. I could always, frankly, they never really worried me. I was beaten up rather badly twice in solitary. Apart from that, they didn't really worry me. It's what is worst about that sort of place is living on top of everyone, month after month, year after year, and the waste of time and not being able to get on with anything. It was that sort of thing that affected me much more than just being knocked around a bit by the Japanese. I suppose I was fed up, and it didn't worry me all that much.
What were the two severe beatings for?
They were in solitary when I was caught talking. They came round once, yes, I was caught talking. The other, I wasn't standing at my door waiting to bow, at the cell door. I could see, cells, outlying cells to start with. I didn't go into the main block of cells till after the broadcasting parade I talked about when I was moved to then. And I could see the door, I could see a gate, could see any Japanese coming through. But there was a way round the back, and twice during my time there, a Jap came round the back and caught me. Once I wasn't standing for attention. The other time, caught me talking, that's when I was here.
Were you required to do any work?
We worked in the jail.
Doing what?
Gardening.
What opinion of the Japanese did your period of imprisonment leave you with?
I'm somewhat unusual, I suppose. As it's said in the thing to my book, that I didn't show any trace of bitterness, when I started, I thought, apart from the Jack trying to kill me, which is perfectly reasonable, after all, it's a war, there's a little business with this horrible little man shouting at me, and they stuck their knives at me, but they didn't actually do anything. They're just sort of testing me out, I suppose. But I didn't have any real complaints to start with. But we were quite unnecessarily half-starved in Moulmein jail because there was no shortage of food at that time there. I got a bit bitter then and angry, rather, put it. Angry and defiant, I think I'd say. During the time under Captain Kashima, who left in September, between June and September, we were in solitary confinement, it was shocking. I was pretty anti the Japanese. After that,